Let's think about pig waste.
I haven't thought about that today, so this is the first time I've thought about it.
I'm Nick Edling, founder and CEO of Not Impossible Labs. For the past 15 years, we've been on a mission to change the world through technology and story by addressing societal problems to improve the lives of everyone. With a crew of engineers, hackers, entrepreneurs, technologists, storytellers, and artists, we've tackled and solved some of the world's most incredible challenges. But here's the thing. We're just a small team in Venice Beach. The world is full of people making the impossible possible. My goal now with this podcast is to find these people, share their stories, and hopefully, together, we can keep pushing the limits of what's possible.
On today's episode, we talk to Dr. Bruce Rittman, whose team is pioneering new ways to eradicate so-called forever chemicals.
Whatever is the equivalent of eggnog for microorganisms, they deserve that this December.
And yeah, and spiked eggnog, not just plain eggnog.
Come on, these guys have been working hard for you all year. They deserve it. Dr. Bruce Rittman, thank you for joining us on the Not Impossible podcast. This is about conversations with people who are doing phenomenal things, helping to transition things from impossible to not impossible. And we have dialogues and conversations with brilliant people like yourself, where the brilliant person, you, are speaking to the not so brilliant person, me, and we're able to decipher or interpret it in a way so that other people like myself who are listening are able to understand your brilliance in a slightly more simplified way. So that's the kind of the goal of the conversation today.
Very good.
Dr. Rittman, you were the number three most influential environmental engineer in the U.S. You were named the number four most influential environmental engineer globally by Academic Influence. You've won the Stockholm Water Prize, which is basically the Nobel Prize for water. It goes on and on and on. In researching you, you've got 64,000 citations. You've got 856,000 published journals, books, articles, and I think you're knocking at 24 patents. So we don't need to talk about moss growing under you. That's for sure. This is this is something that you're incredibly passionate about and incredibly awarded and just acknowledged for the work that you're doing. But I thought we always like to start simple. So I thought we pulled up an article that was published, and I thought we could start with that, just like super basic, super simple stuff, which was the biogenic palladium improved perchlorate reduction during nitrate co-reduction by diverting electron flow in a hydrogenic biofilm. Is that a good simple one to start with? Is that
that's quite a long title there.
I don't know who came up with that. I'm kidding, but I just wanted to give you guys some consulting on your titles. Maybe cut it down to five words or so.
Yeah, I know. That's right. Yeah, you're right. It's a little complicated, but it sells in the, you know, in the technical.
I bet you it's big. You talk about this, your role as a manager and all of these things that you manage, this massive employee base, air quotes for those who can't see, this massive employee base. Yeah. But talk a little bit about your employees, aka the microorganisms.
That's right. Okay, this is good. So you know, I do what we call environmental biotechnology. And the simple definition is we form partnerships with communities of microorganisms. That's my employees, I suppose. And they're going to supply us all sorts of wonderful services that are going to make our society more sustainable, cleaning up pollution, generating renewable resources, even improving our health. And in exchange, we are going to give them a really fine microorganism life. You know, we're going to allow them to do what they really want to do as microorganisms. And that what they want to do is what we want them to do. That's what provides all the services. So that's how it works.
And you talk about the fact that these microorganisms, they're low overhead. I think you might have described them as they're hungry. Like they like when you give them things, they like to breathe them. They like to eat them. They like to, right? That's kind of how you're rewarding them. That's your pay for your employee base.
Yes, it's a very simple life. They have a simple life. You know, they eat and breathe. You know what the things that they are able to eat and breathe. And it's a lot more than we can do. But yeah, it's simple. Well,
when you are, let's talk a little bit about specifically this concept of forever chemicals.
Yes.
Forever chemicals, as I understand it, are chemicals, are compounds that have been created from on a consumer level that are water repellent, that are stain resistant, that are oil resistant, that are Teflon, so it doesn't stick to your pan. These are things that we have created and fabricated. They don't exist naturally in the world, but yes, we've created those together. We've bonded those together to make our world easier, cleaner, simpler, et cetera. Is that correct?
Correct. Correct.
The byproduct of that is if something is largely impermeable to being having water penetrate or any other surface, then you've got something that's going to be hard to destruct. It's going to be hard to remove. Thus the name Forever Chemicals. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah. You have the basic concept correct.
Okay. Yes. All right. So tell it to me. Go one level deeper on the back, because that's my job is to give it the basic level. Your job is to take it one step deeper.
Okay. So these compounds, they go by the acronym PFAS. That's PFAS.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Per- and polyfluorinated alkanoic substances. Okay, so the key is per, and then the F is fluoro. So it means that they're organic molecules that have the fluorine substituent. Fluorine is the chemical symbol F, and it is very useful in the ways you described. So these perfluorinated compounds were discovered in the 1940s, and by the 50s or so, they started to become popular in nonstick pans, in Gore-Tex fabrics, as a fire retardant. The big one is firefighting foams. If you go to airports, this is how they put out fires if they have airplanes catching on fire and things like that. So they're used everywhere. They used to be used in McDonald's hamburger wrappers. I mean, because they would be resistant to the grease coming through. So they just permeate all kinds of commercial and industrial uses around the world. And one of the outcomes of their use everywhere is that we find them everywhere. They're in water. They're in soil. It's almost everywhere now. The other reason they're everywhere, of course, is they're persistent. And this gets to forever. Mm-hmm. Okay, so they're called the forever compounds because they don't break down at all, or only break down really slowly under any normal environmental conditions. So the biology, the sun, the water, the things like that that normally might break down chemicals, normally do break down chemicals, just don't work. And the reason they don't work is because of all these fluorines. Okay, so the fluorine, the organic molecules, of course, made out of carbon. And in a carbon molecule, you have, in a perfluorated molecule, you have every location on the molecule that could have a fluorine substituted on has one. So the perfluorinated, that means everywhere, it's all fluorine attached to the carbon. And the carbon-fluorine bond is the strongest bond known in organic chemistry.
Okay.
So it's intrinsically really difficult to break. And then when you put these fluorine substituents everywhere on the molecule, there's no place to get started, no matter whether it's a biological reaction or any other kind of reaction. So this is why they're called forever, is because you got an extremely strong bond and it's everywhere.
Forever chemicals, often called PFAS, are man-made chemicals created to repel water, grease, and heat. That is why they show up in things like nonstick pans, waterproof jackets, food packaging, and stain-resistant carpets. They are great at their job, but that same toughness means that they do not naturally break down once they get into water, soil, or our bodies.
Is the world better off or worse off because of PFAS?
Yes. I mean, we do get a lot of services. I mean, these are remarkably good chemicals at doing what they're supposed to do, whether it's making it water repellent or resisting fires or even putting out fires. I mean, these are really incredibly good. The United States Department of Defense for decades mandated that every Army base, Air Force base where they had airplanes or rockets, they had to use these perfluorinated films because they were so good. They were really, really good. But the other side of the coin is we're now discovering two things. One is that they persist and they're everywhere. It's number one. And number two is they're getting into humans and animals and into the whole food chain, and they're causing a lot of health problems, you know, human health problems as well as ecosystem health problems. And so that, you know, we invented them in the 40s. They started to get really big in the 50s and 60s and so on. And it was maybe the 1990s when people just started discovering, whoa, these are everywhere.
These
and
aren't
we're
so
starting
good.
To see, we're starting to see the problems.
Right. And it looks like cancer, thyroid conditions, developmental disorders, a lot of these things yes. could be linked to it.
PFAS are hard to get rid of because their atoms are locked together by an extremely strong bond between carbon and fluorine. Think of it like an industrial strength superglue. Nature has plenty of ways to break down weak bonds, but very few tools that can pry this one apart.
So we're cruising along. We've created these things out of convenience. We realize humanity might have created something that has some good, but there's also the yin and the yang of this. It's doing some bad. And then you start talking about this in 1978 in your first published article. You start talking about water treatment. Right.
Yeah. Wow.
This is I know, because it seems like only yesterday, right?
That's right.
So talk a little bit then about the breakthrough that you've had in the creation of the MBFR, the membrane biofilm reactor, which it seems like that was something was invented about 9 years ago. Is that correct?
But more like about 20 years ago.
20 years. Okay.
Yeah. Let's imagine something everybody can relate to, a straw.
Okay.
All right, we all know what a straw is. So we use membranes. They're called hollow fiber membranes. They're basically straws, but really, really tiny straws. And in the inside of the straw, we deliver a gas that the microorganisms need and want. So in the original and still widely used membrane biofilm reactor, we're delivering the gas hydrogen, H2.
Okay.
Now, this is for the microorganisms. It's their favorite food. If you were asked bacteria, well, what would you like to eat? Most of them would say, we'll take hydrogen. Okay. And so we're going to deliver hydrogen to these bacteria. And as you described correctly, on the outside of the membrane is this biofilm. It's a layer-like structure of the microorganisms that stick themselves to the surface. Now, if you were a microorganism, and your favorite food was hydrogen, and I'm delivering hydrogen by it's diffusing through the wall of this membrane, where would you like to live? Well, you'd like to live on your food supply.
Sure.
Remember, microorganisms have simple lives here, simple needs. So we're basically giving the chance to live directly on their food supply. Well, they're really happy.
That's eureka. And, that's right. It's everything that a microorganism wanted since they were a
Absolutely.
Baby microorganism.
That's right. And then in the water that's passing around, you know, through the outside of the membrane, that's where we have the pollutants that we want the microorganisms to reduce. Okay, so now that's a chemistry term.
Okay.
When I use it, reduce means accept electrons.
Okay.
So, and hydrogen is the source of electrons. We call that the electron donor or the food. And the microorganisms remove the electrons from the hydrogen and transfer the electrons to these oxidized pollutants in the water, and they get reduced and they're no longer pollutants. So hang on.
You just say casually at the end of your sentence, and now they're no longer pollutants, and you were going to go on to the next brilliant thing.
All right,
hang on a second. That's the not impossible part. That's where you've taken something that's really, really bad to humans and to the environment, and it's now it seems like it's penetrated and permeated tons of spaces that we live, and now you've created something that is able to reduce that, so it's now no longer an issue.
When microorganisms add electrons to certain pollutants, they can change them into forms that are no longer harmful. Instead of just filtering pollution or moving it somewhere else, this process actually neutralizes it.
When was the moment that this realization, when was the aha moment where you realized you had these really bad things, these PFAS, and then this MBFR, is that what you do? Do you actually ever say the word or do you say MBFR?
Well, I want to say MBFR.
If I'm at a cocktail party, I want to sound like I know what I'm talking about. So MBFR.
Okay.
So what was the moment? What was the day? What was the time? What was the, where you were like, Eureka! Oh my God, look what's happening.
I said, the microorganisms love hydrogen. I bet if I give them hydrogen, they can do all of this. And it turns out I was right.
Thank you. And when was that?
Well, it started about 2000.
Okay.
And we've been continually adding more, more oxidized contaminants over the
And when you say know, we, this is you and your actual human team at ASU, as well as your employee base of microorganisms.
That's right. My human team, my students and postdocs and things like that. So
amazing.
So that's the first part of your question is the aha moment about the membrane biofilm reactor and using hydrogen.
Okay. Now, hold on. Hang on. Did you go out for pizza when that happened? Did you go? I was trying to remember, like Peter Piper pizza. I'm going old school Phoenix on you right now.
Yeah,
or was there this long, languid understanding or discovery process, or was there a eureka moment where you set up the experiment and it worked?
Yeah, there was actually a eureka moment like that, and that was I had a new PhD student. And this was, again, around 2000 or just after 2000. And this was just when perchlorate was becoming a big issue in the United States.
Yep.
And I had this understanding that I just explained. I said to him, his name is Rob. I said, Rob, I think if you take our membrane biofilm reactor and you add perchlorate, it's going to get reduced. Give it a try.
Casually, you say, listen, I'm going to go play tennis. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah. You go in the lab, you do it. So anyway, he did it and he got brave one day and he just started putting some perchlorate in. And the next day it was half gone. And then, 2 days later it was like 99% gone. So it worked the first time, just like I said.
That's amazing.
So anyway, we've tried it with many, many, many more compounds ever since then. And they always worked. If we think it should work, it always works.
Okay.
Okay. So that's the hydrogen, delivering hydrogen to reduce things using the microorganisms. But then you ask me about PFAS, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little different. It's a little different.
Okay.
So remember, these perfluorinated compounds really are forever compounds. They don't easily break down. And I can tell you, I don't really think our microorganisms are going to do it by themselves.
Okay.
Yeah. It's tough. But I like my microorganisms and I want to give them some help. So I'm going to give the microorganisms a little help here to get the process started. And then I know they'll take over and they'll finish the job. So I had the idea, looking at the chemistry of these perfluorinated compounds, that they would be susceptible to being what we call reductively defluorinated.
Okay.
So what does that mean? And the reason I said that, and this is, I'm going to try to anthropomorphize this for you.
Okay.
The reason I said this was because of the chemical, important chemical property of the fluorine element. It's very electronegative. Oh, that's a chemistry term. What does it mean? So let's say you and I are trying to form a chemical bond. All right. And what holds us together.
I can feel that right now.
Yeah, we're doing it. And so there's something that's bonding us together. Now, if it's a molecule, it's electrons. So two elements share electrons. That's a bond.
Yep.
But one of us doesn't like to share equally. Maybe me.
It's you. It's
maybe I'm
you.
Electronegative. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to hold those electrons a lot closer to me, and you're not going to hardly be able to touch them. Okay. Now, so my thought was, well, you know, this electronegative guy really likes those electrons. So how about we just give him an extra electron and maybe he'll just go away?
Okay.
That was it. He'd take his electrons with him and go. And so what we do is we use the palladium as the vehicle for transferring electrons to the fluorine part of the carbon-fluorine bond. And the fluorine says, oh, just what I want. I want electron. He grabs the electrons and goes away. And then a hydrogen molecule takes its place on the particle.
Okay, so when you say it goes away, it's because now it becomes it now changes into hydrogen?
No, the fluorine just changes into the fluoride fluoride ion.
Okay.
And it just it literally goes away. Away from the PFAS molecule. And then the PFAS molecule has a hydrogen substituted where that F fluorine used
and
to
then
be.
And now the PFAS molecule is what is it
okay now? That you're getting to the right point here. So if we do this a few times, remove the F, put in an F put an H in to replace it, soon that molecule becomes biodegradable.
Okay.
Yes. Now you see, I've helped my microorganisms. I've taken this non-biodegradable, completely fluorinated molecule, and I've taken away some of the Fs, put in some Hs, and now the molecule becomes accessible to the microorganisms, and they start to biodegrade it. And then we have a second reactor where they do the biodegradation. And so we're helping the microorganisms. We're getting the reaction started. And once it gets started, then the microorganisms can take over.
PFAS are so stable that microorganisms need help to get started. Palladium acts like a middleman, delivering electrons directly into the fluorine atoms in PFAS. When fluorine grabs those electrons, it breaks away from the molecule. After enough fluorine is removed, the chemical becomes something microbes can recognize and break down completely.
You know, it's
so CO2 this PFAS, the F stands for fluorine, right?
Yeah, fluorine, yes.
So that now has now transferred through this process. The fluorine is what made it forever. It's now gone. You put in hydrogen. Now it becomes biodegradable. And this big, tough, impenetrable forever chemical is now this lovely hippie, you know, Birkenstock wearing microorganism. And it's now biodegradable.
That's exactly right. You've got it in a very nice anthropomorphized way. Yes. And that's exactly what the strategy is. And we've done this. I mean, we've done, you know, we've done both steps. You first step is you remove the fluorine, you know, and then you take the molecule and you give it to the microorganisms, they biodegrade. And we've done both steps and it works just like I explained.
Amazing. What does it look like when this is at scale? Is this a water treatment plant? Are we going over with a biplane and sprinkling this over the, you know, our cities? What does this look like?
You know, for the PFAS one, we're still trying to figure out what are the rates and how big the system has to be and how many modules. But it's a modular thing, and then it becomes just a matter of plumbing, doing good plumbing to get the water to flow.
But is this like a central, municipally controlled central plant? Is this something that I do, my water purifier at home that just goes into my sink? Like where does this exist?
It's probably not going to go under your sink.
Okay.
It's not going to be quite that small scale. But you easily could imagine, certainly you could do it at a big water utility, like the drinking water plant. If they have, PFAS contamination, they could just add this, to their treatment train, and that's what they would do. Or, a lot of these things are on sites that are not treatment plants, are just contaminated water. And you could then have a small system, maybe a skid-mounted system that you would take out there to handle the water, right where it is.
This solution is not about releasing chemicals into the environment. It works inside controlled modular reactor systems that treat contaminated water directly. These systems can be scaled up from pilot projects to large water treatment facilities, depending on how much contaminated water needs to be cleaned.
Now that I know about PFAS, do I fear them? When you go home, do you not drink water out of the tap because you're worried about PFAS? Like where should the average consumer be concerned about PFAS? Or is it too late? That cat's out of the bag. They're everywhere. There's nothing to do.
Well, first of all, they are everywhere, and it's in a lot of waters, and it's in food, and it's around. But I don't think there's anything that a person, an individual, needs to do that's special. You know, for example, if my drinking water supply were contaminated with PFAS, then the city or the utility would have to tell me. And if it were really serious, they would have to stop distributing it and use drinking bottled water or something.
Okay.
So I don't think anybody should be panicking about this, but it's something in the long term we need to fix, because these molecules accumulate. They accumulate in the food chain all the way up through humans. And so, if we don't do something about it now and begin to reduce the exposures, it can continue to get worse.
And it doesn't seem like regulation has happened until recently.
Yes, you're correct. Of course, it hasn't been discovered that long ago either. Really the last 10 years or so is when the real awareness of PFAS has come along. A few states have regulations. The US EPA is proposing some very stringent regulations on six of the most common PFAS molecules. So
Dr. Rittman, thank you for your time today. Right, I know how busy you are. Really appreciated the conversation. Thanks so much.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Mick.
Cheers.
And that wraps up another episode of the podcast, where we talk to some of the world's most fascinating people, transforming the impossible into the not impossible. A big thank you to Dr. Bruce Rittman for talking to us about his work in eliminating forever chemicals from our environment. It's conversations like these that remind us that with enough innovation, even the toughest problems can be solved. Don't forget to follow us on your favorite podcast platforms, and remember, change is hard, but making the world a better place, it's not impossible. I'm Mick Emlyn.